Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
For the benefit of our viewers, today we're talking about one of the least exciting subject matters in divorce and family law, and that's taxes. And what could be even less attractive than talking about taxes is the subject matter of taxes and monies that get transferred from one spouse to another when they are splitting up or have already split up. And so we're going to discuss not only what the basic laws are, but we're going to also discuss how people sometimes navigate the different tax regimes in Canada, or specifically in Ontario, in light of the various tax implications. And so before I continue, let me just double check. Leanne, how's the sound coming out at your end?
Sounds fine. Like, there's a little bit of background noise, but it's not, your voice is clear, so there's no issue.
Beautiful. Okay, so let's start with the three different forms of money transfers that occur. Actually, let me expand that. There's actually four potential money transfers that occur when a couple is splitting up or has already split up. Number one, child support. Number two, spousal support. Number three, property, or a property settlement that could involve the transfer of assets and or money. The fourth one is reimbursement. So let's start with the easiest one. If there is a separation agreement that says that husband must pay wife X dollars as a reimbursement, there are no tax implications. Or the money that the wife gets in that transfer is not considered income, and the wife does not report that income. If, on the other hand, the husband has to earn that money and pay tax on that money, or sell assets to acquire the money to transfer to the wife, then you could say there are tax implications in that the wife gets the money tax-free in my example, and the husband actually has to find the money either through income, which he paid taxes on, sale of assets, which he might have paid taxes on, in order to pay the wife that money. But for the purposes of taxes, if it's a reimbursement, there are no tax implications. In other words, the wife doesn't pay tax on it, and the husband doesn't get any tax relief for it. On the second last one, property transactions. If, as a result of a divorce, the property is divided, and then there is a payment made, usually called an equalization payment. So, for example, if the husband gets $8 worth of property, and the wife gets $10 worth of property, obviously that's an imbalance. 10 is $2 more than 8. So in that situation, the wife owes the husband half of the $2, which is $1. And the husband gets that $1 tax-free. And the wife does not get to write off the $1 payment. So there are no tax implications for that transfer. And I haven't talked about, by the way, how the assets that each got had tax implications. That's a whole other conversation. Spousal support and child support are the last two, and those cause the greatest amount of confusion for spouses, because the government of Canada, in their respectful view, those were two very different things. And I'm not going to take you back too far, but there once was a time in the earlier years of my practice where both child support and spousal support were taxable income. But for the last 25 years-ish, child support has been paid with after-tax dollars and received tax-free. So if somebody makes $100,000 a year and gets another $25,000 in child support, they only pay tax on their $100,000 of income. And the $25,000 of child support that I just described, they receive tax-free. But the person paying it, that person might have had to earn $40,000, paid $15,000 in tax on it in order to pay the $25,000 to the recipient. And of course, we can get into a whole discussion about the fairness or the lack of fairness of that, but that's the law in Canada. And that leaves me with spousal support. Unlike child support, spousal support, when paid under the terms of a written contract or a court order, are tax deductible to the person paying it and taxable to the person receiving it. And to use my last example of $100,000, if the wife earns $100,000 and the husband pays the wife $25,000 a year in spousal support, the wife actually now declares $125,000 of income. And that $25,000 in spousal support might only net her about $12,500 after taxes. Whereas the husband, to pay $25,000 in tax in spousal support, he will deduct that against his income. And that $25,000 might only cost him about $15,000 or $20,000 in money out of his pocket after he gets the tax relief for what he paid. So those are the four different tax implications. I just wanted to hear from Leanne if you want to discuss any of that further before we jump in to say how to play around with that and how people have used that in settlement negotiations.
You did a great explanation of the four types of money transfers and the tax implications. So I don't really have anything further to add specific to the explanation. So why don't we jump to the next phase?
Sure.
And chat about, some of the issues that can come up and how people want to play around with some of these numbers.
So a lot of questions come out of what I just described in places like negotiation and mediation and not in litigation. Why? Because think about it. The government of Canada has a branch called the Canada Revenue Agency. Their job is to get the maximum amount of taxes out of Canadians in order to provide services to the people of Canada. Their job is not to minimize the amount of taxes they get. Well, the very same government that has that department to collect the maximum amount of taxes also uses some of those tax dollars to pay the salary of judges. Well, it should come as no surprise that the judges are not going to participate in any schemes, even if they are completely legitimate, to minimize taxes. They're simply going to make rulings on child support, spousal support, property division, and reimbursement. And however the taxes are, that's the outcome that will occur from the relief granted in a court proceeding. In the areas of family law where people mediate or negotiate deals, that's where they come to people like Leanne and I and say, let's figure out how we can get that money from A to B with the least amount of tax dollars payable to the government of Canada. And so this is a situation where if we know, to go back to my example, that the deal that we're going to strike is where the husband writes the wife monthly checks totaling $25,000 a year, and that's going to be called child support and spousal support, or just child support or just spousal support, and we know that the husband wants the wife to get $25,000, and we know that the wife wants $25,000, we can figure out a settlement whereby they get the best tax relief. And it may be that we have to divvy that number up between child and spousal, or make it all child, or make it all spousal, or make it all reimbursement, or make it all under the heading of property. Because at the end of the day, a toonie is a toonie is a toonie. How it goes from A to B at the end of the day is a matter of papering it in a memorandum of understanding, in a separation agreement, or quite frankly, in some cases, even in a court order that's on consent. But it could have a mammoth impact on what each person ends up with in their pocket at the end of the year in light of the tax rules that I just described. And so a lot of times people will come up with these alternative schema, And we, Leanne and I, will be speaking with the parties, with the spouses. We'll also be speaking with their accountants to ensure that, first of all, we do everything lawfully. And secondly, we do everything in a manner that allows them to lawfully minimize their taxes and lawfully maximize how much money remains within the family unit and the least amount of money that lands in the hands of the government coffers. And so this is where knowledge of the tax rules is extremely valuable. And we haven't even gotten into some of the heavy hitting stuff, like using other vehicles, corporations and trusts, for example, or how, what's the interplay with government tax relief and tax benefits. That's, we've done that before. I think we did that either last week or a few weeks ago. And there are other topics there. But let me just bring Leanne, you into this conversation with, let's just like pick up on anything that we said. And I invite you to sort of tell me what some of your experiences have been when helping clients dealing with the subject of taxes and divorce.
Well, I've found that I've had situations where we're in a mediation and we're trying to play around a little bit with, you know, whether all the money should be designated as child support or spousal support, or whether it should be, you know, part in part. The communication and explanations to the client can be really important, as well as the involvement of their accountant, because I find clients are often naturally uncomfortable if they want to think that they're getting the maximum amount of child support they're entitled to, and then the maximum amount of spousal support they're entitled to. And sometimes if something is just designated as all one or all the other, they get nervous that that means that they're not getting their proper amount of child support or spousal support. And so it's really important for lawyers to, you know, have good communication with the client about those issues and get them comfortable with. And it's really important the clients trust that their lawyer, you know, their lawyer's expertise, and that, you know, their accountant has been involved, or whatever other financial or tax experts they work with, because those can be really great solutions to maximize the amount of money in both parties' pockets and not in the pocket of Revenue Canada. But you know, they're a little more creative or unconventional. So getting people comfortable that it is a good solution is really important.
And it's also important to understand that what somebody puts in a contract is not binding on the government of Canada. Somebody could say, I want this dollar to be tax deductible or tax includable. Well, it doesn't bind the government of Canada. And sometimes a person with bad advice or lack of advice doesn't end up with what they thought they were going to get.
That's a good point. And then another issue that I see come up a lot is where the parties have been separated for a little while and they didn't get lawyers right away, or maybe they got lawyers, but things are moving slowly and there hasn't been any sort of interim agreement and whatnot. But one spouse has been paying for certain things or paying some money towards the other one. Where that can get tricky is because, as Steve mentioned, the payor can deduct spousal support for tax purposes, and the payee has to claim it. If you don't have a separation agreement, or you don't have some sort of agreement in writing that designating that that's what these payments are for, and that's how the parties are going to treat them for tax purposes, you can run into a situation where someone is paying money that technically may be spousal support, but because it hasn't been designated as such, they're not able to get that deduction, you know, from their taxes, and they may try and ask for it later on when you're doing the negotiation, and the recipient may not want to have to go back and refile income tax returns and now be claiming more income than they originally had. And so those types of situations can be a little more complex, but they do come up fairly often.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that the subject of a divorce really is a cross-section between many areas of law at the same time. Family law, trust law, tax law, estates law, real estate law. And so these are situations where we oftentimes, Leanne and I, we're not only the lawyer, we're also the quarterback, we're also the convener of the discussion with various people to make sure that the deal that the client wants, that the client is entitled to, is ultimately the deal that they're going to get, to the extent that we can even predict that. And sometimes, with the best of advice, we can't always ensure that the government of Canada is going to honor the agreement. And in some cases they do, and in some cases they don't. But of course, the more information that we have at the front end, the better it is. I just wanted to also flag a few things that have often come up. First of all, the whole subject matter of child support, like I said, there's no tax relief per se, no deductibility, no inclusion. So when people pay child support, you don't need an agreement because there's no need for there to be an agreement for the purposes of deducting or including. Whereas with spousal support, this is a requirement under the Income Tax Act. In the absence of a separation agreement or a court order, denoting the fact that the payments are periodic and are spousal support and not any other type of payment, there will not be any taxation of the recipient's money, and there will not be any deduction of the payer's money. And this is a very big deal, because there's a lot of people that split up, and before they have a written agreement, they're making monthly payments of spousal support. And I've had many cases over the years where my client says to me, I am paying my ex-husband or my ex-wife X dollars per month in spousal support, and I've been doing this for 2 or 3 years, and they haven't gotten any tax relief. And in some cases, they could potentially lose the right to then refile and get the tax relief. And it's critical that if spousal support is being paid, that they consult with their CA and their family law lawyer to ensure that they get maximum tax relief. The other thing that comes up often is retroactive payments. Some people have made the payments retroactively, and now they want to go backwards and get tax relief. But that tax relief is now if the recipient agrees to reflect that the past payments were indeed spousal support. That person's going to be hit with a tax bill they may not be particularly inclined to. So that's another issue. And then there's the other issue coming from that also, which is, what happens if people do a lump sum settlement of spousal support, which is very popular? And in those situations, people should understand that if it's a lump sum, there's no tax relief. Or to put it another way, it's baked into the deal. So if someone is getting 5 years of spousal support up front, not only is there going to be a discount for getting the money up front, there's going to be another discount for the lack of tax relief available. And so what might otherwise be a $100,000 amount that they're getting over the next 5 years, the person receiving it might only get, say, $40,000 today, because they're getting that money tax-free. Whereas the $100,000 that they might have gotten over the next 5 years would have only netted them maybe $40,000 or $50,000 after taxes. And so these are other implications. And then on top of all of that, we haven't even gotten into the tax implications of property transfers. And under the Income Tax Act, when a couple splits up, they can do what are called tax-free rollovers. Normally, when you transfer an asset, like a stock portfolio or a non-matrimonial home from one spouse to another spouse, oftentimes in those situations, taxes are to be paid. No different than if I transferred my house to Leanne, I would have to pay the government of Canada tax on the gain that I made until the date that I transferred it to Leanne. But if I transferred to my wife as part of a divorce settlement, I could roll over the cost base to my wife, and she pays taxes on that asset later on when she disposes of the asset, whether it's a stock, a portfolio, real estate, again, not matrimonial home, because as everybody in Ontario knows, your principal residence is tax-free upon sale or transfer. But on the other hand, the government of Canada doesn't give you two of those credits. So if you've got your matrimonial home and you've got a cottage or a ski chalet or a property that you use recreationally, that other property carries with it an embedded tax bill. And that embedded tax bill would normally be paid when you transfer it out of your name, but it's not paid if you're transferring out of your name as a result of the divorce settlement, whether by court order or separation agreement. And by the way, that doesn't mean you don't ever pay tax. It just means that the tax bill that is associated with that asset gets delayed into the future. And then that is equalized with a spouse at the date of separation. In other words, it's not that the person receiving the asset never pays tax, or the person who transferred it isn't partly responsible for the tax. They've factored that into the calculation in the settlement to ensure that that tax that would otherwise be paid is shared at the time of settlement. So there are a myriad of tax issues. And I just want our viewers to know that even Leanne and I often have to consult with tax professionals to ensure that the client's financial needs are met by the deal that they strike. But I'm going to give a plug now to non-court divorce settlements. A lot of the options that are available to separating spouses are only available to them if they do a deal out of court. That doesn't mean that their deal cannot be turned into a consent order in court, but if they rely on a judge to rule on it, they have no freedom to navigate the taxes. It just is what it is that a judge decides. But if they do a deal in mediation or in negotiation or in collaborative family law, they've got a lot more options than they would if they were to do it in court. If they were to do it in court and let a judge decide, that tax money, 100% of it is going to go to the government of Canada.
Yeah, it's important that people, you know, look at options to be creative. And it's also important that people understand that some of this stuff, it's not black and white. You know, with respect to, for example, property, we have something we call disposition costs when we're doing our financial statements and figuring out what somebody's net family property is. And so something like a pension or an RRSP, and there's other property as well, they have some tax implications when the person reaches a certain age and they start withdrawing from the RRSP and or from the pension. They do have to pay tax on that money. It's just a deferred vehicle. And so I have a file right now where myself and the opposing counsel are not in agreement on what tax rate should be used. And, you know, to the lay person out there, they might think, well, that should just be black and white. Like, why is that an area for discussion? But it is an area for discussion. It's not black and white. And, you know, there's reasons that I want to use the tax rate I'm recommending. There's reasons the opposing counsel is using the tax rate that she's recommending. We may have to resort to an expert to, you know, weigh in, who does valuations and can do a, you know, a calculation to actually determine what, in the expert's opinion, the tax rate should be. But, you know, these issues are complicated, so it's important to get the, you know, to have experts involved and to not make these types of, you know, decisions without consulting the appropriate experts.
Absolutely. And one last tax tip for those people receiving support: the money that they paid in legal fees and in expert fees may be tax deductible, and that could have a big impact on the taxes that they have to pay in the year that they paid their lawyer or their expert's fees. A lot of people forget about that, and they don't get the tax relief, which the government of Canada is all too happy to get more taxes. So if you have friends that have gone through a divorce, in the year that they went through the divorce, they should get a letter from their lawyer indicating how much fees they had paid their lawyer for the purposes of support, because that amount of money may be deductible. And of course, as usual, consult your accountant, your tax lawyer, and your family lawyer on anything that we talked about today, because it really is complex, and it's even difficult for many lawyers to know and navigate the laws, because they also change from year to year based on court decisions that come out of the Tax Court of Canada.
Absolutely. So thanks everyone for joining us today. Thanks, Steve. And we will see everyone here again next week.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.